Welcome to the Evaluating Biopharma podcast, where we meet with the top experts in the field to deconstruct challenges and opportunities that they've each experienced in order to provide you, the listener, with real-world practical advice and knowledge to help in your own work and to see things a little bit differently. I'm your host, Ben Lockwin, and it's my pleasure to sit down for a chat today with my friend and colleague, Brian Tam, principal consultant at Peregrine Bio, consummate scientific thinker, and industry CMC expert. Hello, Brian. Great to have you here.
Hey, Ben. Thanks for having me. Really appreciate it.
Would you please start off by telling our listeners a bit about yourself and your work in the industry?
Yeah, sure thing. I have a degree in microbiology and immunology, which I parlayed into a job at Lonza way back the turn of the season, Portsmouth, New Hampshire, where I met you all those years ago. And
yes,
you know, after very much a manufacturing process development type space, right, moved on to some capital project work at Lonza, after which I went down south to Washington, D.C., and I've been there ever since. I worked at first for Human Genome Sciences, helping them on development of their Benlysta product for lupus, and then stuck around at GlaxoSmithKline following their acquisition of HGS in 2012. After a few years at GSK, I decided I missed the feel of a smaller company. So I moved over to Novavax, where I worked on their entire portfolio of vaccine development projects and their proprietary adjuvant. After a while at Novavax, I took the leap. This is my fifth year in operation as Peregrine Bio, where I've been able to work with a wide variety of clients, all product modalities, all stage of clinical development. It's been a really, really great and exciting ride, especially having gotten to go through the pandemic and work on some of the COVID programs that were in development, and also post-pandemic and helping clients move through the new sort of macro environment, right, post-COVID.
Right, right. Yeah, so you definitely have a lot of experience in, well, across the industry, of course, that's clear, and in running projects and, you know, understanding different processes for clients and what you've seen throughout the breadth of your career. And today I wanted to catch up with you and talk about how various projects are run in the pharmaceutical industry. And I guess not just the high level management of projects, but the next layer down, so improving the outcome of projects and processes, the notion of continuous improvement and operational excellence more broadly. I think there's almost no area in the pharma industry that has been untouched by the principles of operational excellence. So I think all the listeners will have at least a cursory understanding, but let's start where we should start, which is at the beginning. So what's your take on the history of operational excellence and continuous improvement in our industry?
Yeah, I think the history is really interesting, obviously coming out from total quality management, right, TQM, which it was sort of coined in 100 years ago now, right, in the 1920s. And that was a lot of the stuff at the time was really revolutionary, but things that we take for granted now, right? Ooh, focus on the customer, fact-based decision-making. Those things were new at the time. And then, of course, you know, that became like the standard for American industry on assembly line style factories. And then in the 60s, it got exported to Japan. And Japan gave us back lean manufacturing, right, out of the Toyota system, which I'm sure, yeah, all your listeners are probably familiar with. And then in the 80s, right, Motorola added Six Sigma into the mix. And we're at a point now where we've had, 100 years, right, across the breadth of, capital I industry of these operational excellence initiatives being around. And they've really been a factor for us in biotech and pharma, I think, for the duration of those industries. So those industries have never, especially the biotech side, has never existed in a paradigm without operational excellence and continuous improvement.
Yeah, that's true. Because I guess by the late 90s, most of the Fortune 500 companies were already using Six Sigma, were using principles of lean to reduce costs, improve quality. And that's a really shiny object that's too seductive for the biotech of 25 years ago to not be interested in.
Right, right. Especially as those companies began to mature and they had started to have IPOs and they started to have responsibilities for quarterly reporting and those kinds of things. And right, and that created a lot of incentives to have these sort of processes, right, implemented in-house in some form.
Yeah. All right. So a couple and change, 2.5 decades in now for the industry, has it worked?
And, you know, that's a great question. And I think the answer, the answer is yes, but also sort of no, right? I think it's worked insofar as it has given, I think, us as an industry of some shared tool, shared language to talk about, you know, doing things better, right? Trying to achieve the sort of goal of perfection, right? I think that was really the Toyota thing, right? Aspire to perfection. But also no, insofar as like we, in our industry, we've been doing this for 25 years. Is our collective performance better than it was 25 years ago? And I think there the answer is kind of no, right? We go into, you know, manufacturing audits or situations, we still see a fair number of deviations happening, right? In routine manufacturing, we still see, you know, about the same baseline level of rejected batches, right? Even like in across the industry, that target, right? When you talk to manufacturing leaders, the targets for manufacturing success rate, it hasn't really moved. Everyone's still kind of targeting, 90% success rate we'll be happy with, maybe 95, right? We don't see people really trying to push that boundary. And so in that regard, I think the answer is no. I think we've reached this weird sort of plateau and things kind of sort of stagnated for us as an industry on that front.
Yeah, interesting. So you have companies like General Electric, who has claimed to save more than $1 billion with Six Sigma initiatives and, you know, lean for sure interspersed in there. Big companies like Honeywell as well. Motorola, who's attributed more than $17 billion to Six Sigma savings. So, you know, in the context of big companies having done this and seen a lot of success, and you're saying that we probably haven't seen what we imagined in our industry. So what do you think the key differences are between our industry and other types of manufacturing?
Yeah, so in some ways, it might be a matter of, are we setting the expectations too high? Because there is a fundamental mismatch in some ways between our industry and the industries that produced a lot of these operational excellence tools, right? And the industries that kind of realize a lot of these like $1 billion benefits from them. Like if you think about, you know, TQM, right? TQM came from assembly line factories, right? Owned by, you know, the big companies of that time, like Mobile or, you know, whatever those likes of Ford, right? And the lean manufacturing, right? Lean manufacturing came out of Toyota, came out of the automotive industry, right? Motorola produced Six Sigma. The manufacturing operations for those industries look nothing like what the manufacturing operations look like in biotech and pharma. And there is a little bit of ideological hubris at the idea of lean, Six Sigma. These things are so powerful. You can put them anywhere in any context and boom, billions of dollars of savings will just happen. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that's actually true, because, you know, we have, you know, some very, you know, specific traits in our industry that kind of get in the way of this, right? Like pharma and biotech manufacturing, with the exception of like those really blockbuster drugs, right? Like say the Ozempics of the world, most of our manufacturing is done in short run campaigns, right? A small number of batches that are only going to yield a relatively small amount of data. A lot of our processes, especially in the biologic space, have black box process steps. Stuff goes into a bioreactor, this active, you know, cell culture, these like living, you know, living factories that we have no understanding of, you know, what's happening inside those cells necessarily. They do stuff and they make the product, but we don't really know what's happening, you know, inside those cells. And then again, right, all the incentives, all the economic incentives generally line up for us to scale up our batch sizes. Whereas if you look at the principles of a lot of these operational excellence initiatives, the idea is to kind of scale down, right? I remember having doing a mental exercise with a lean manufacturing guru, and hey, he was sort of challenging the group to see like, would it be possible to manufacture drugs and in a single dose batch size, right? Stuff like that is where the lean minds want to go. And, you know, for us, we know you want a 1,000 liter bioreactor, 10,000 liter bioreactor, right? We want to scale up.
Right.
And we're also an industry that, you know, models don't work very well for us in a lot of ways. The mathematical model that a lot of these initiatives are built on, they, you know, because again, we have some of these black box processes, our data sets are often thin, there is a need for, in our industry, to just get the empirical data and iterate, right? And read and react, as opposed to having these very sort of standardized, broadly applied, you know, principles that by shaving small incremental cost savings because of the, you know, because of the economies of scale some of these industries get, they can really translate that into huge numbers that we aren't really able to do.
Right. Yeah, it reminds me of that quote by the eminent statistician George E.P. Box, which was something like, all models are wrong and some models are useful.
Exactly. Exactly. That's a fantastic quote.
So what does all this mean then for the way our development programs are managed or should be managed?
Yeah. And, you know, I think certainly, you know, need to understand, right, the operational excellence status quo, it's not bad, right? To your point, some models are useful. And there are places where I think Lean Six Sigma and their variants, extremely useful, like extremely powerful tools to do certain things. But there is an open need for us to be doing something better, right? And one of the things that I think we need is a way to like sort of respect the iterative nature of the science that goes into our processes. I think an interesting benchmark for this that I'm seeing implemented a little bit is agile, like agile project management, program management processes, which are very popular, obviously, in the tech industry. Mm. And I think that those are great because they have sort of this built-in very fast cycle of iteration. Not so great because, you know, that tech industry, again, this is the fundamental mismatches whenever we try to import things from other industries, right? Those agile techniques don't really respect the consequence of failures of quality, right? In the software industry, if you got buggy software for some phone app you're developing, what happens? Your users get maybe a little frustrated, right? For us, if we have a failure in quality, people might die, right? These consequences are much more severe and the controls aren't really there in agile. But I think there's something there in terms of its ability to build in that iteration into the sort of standard way of working that's really, really valuable. I think another thing that we could be looking at is, can we make our operations more compatible, right? Can we make the change as an industry, right? And, you know, I want to go back to the idea of, can we get our batch sizes down to a single dose? No, we can't do that. But I think maybe we could do a little more with the available continuous manufacturing techniques that are available to us. I think because, you know, batch and fed batch styles of processing in the biologics side, that's what you do in the shake flask and the small bioreactors at PD. So that's naturally what you want to scale up. But I think there's a case to be made that things like, you know, perfusion processing and stuff like that are maybe a little bit underutilized in our industry. And I think that those sorts of techniques might be a little more compatible with sort of operational excellence initiatives, right? Create those sort of your longer running, more repetitive, more assembly line style flows of work around which a lot of those tools are based.
Right. Yeah. I wonder too, if something like autologous cell therapy, like autologous CAR T therapies, where they're using the patient's peripheral blood, that's, you know, one patient, one dose sort of thing, you know, or maybe one patient, several doses. But that gets to the idea of a batch size is N equals one. And the question then being, you know, is people would love to take the lean principles and say, well, if we can do that for autologous cell therapy, why can't we backpropagate that model and do other sorts of biotech runs just like that? And I guess that's not a question. I'm just sort of waxing philosophic there.
Yeah, I mean, it is interesting to think about. And you know, I do think one of the issues that we deal with you know, Lean and Six Sigma stuff is like, there is sometimes a phenomenon I see where things that show up on the lean manufacturing radar as waste, right? Oh, that's, you know, that's wasted movement, or that's wasted, you know, cash and standing inventory. Mm. Sometimes there's actually value in that waste that's not easily visible in our industry to like a traditional like Lean Six Sigma minded person. Like I'll give an example. You know, in an analytical lab setting, right? Sometimes the critical reagents, there's certain combinations of lots that work better than others. And that creates an incentive to maybe have a few different lots of reagents available. Mm-hmm. And, but, you know, at some point, maybe someone hires a lean manufacturing consultant and they're like, why do you have four lots of these reagents? You only need one at a time. And boom, all of a sudden you've cleared out You know, you've cleared out three of the four bottles you had on the shelf, hidden lean outcomes, looks really great. And then all of a sudden your assay performance drops off because, you know, you don't have the power, right? The power that comes from having the option of being able to flex into one lot of reagent or another. And I think sometimes those sorts of, you know, hidden values, right, that aren't easily measured or sometimes not measured at all, and therefore get sort of ignored almost, right, by the current OE paradigms that are very much, and I understand why this happens, right? You know, that's the whole thing, right? If you can measure it, you can manage it, right? And that's true, right? We should be trying to measure things wherever we can. But I think the counterpoint to that would be, just because something is not measured doesn't mean it's not important too. And so, yes, you measure what you can, manage all those things. But sometimes there is that stuff that exists in the white space, right? And it makes the OE gurus very uncomfortable, right? They have a very perfectionist idea. We can measure everything and manage everything, and whatever is not measurable and manageable can, you know, doesn't count.
Right.
And again, we have too many black boxes in our industry to be able to take that kind of stance. We can't be that rigid about it.
Well, yeah, and I love that quote you used too, your own quote. But it's also, you know, the idea of just because you can measure it doesn't necessarily mean maybe you should, because, you know, in statistics, we also have the principle of parsimony, and you want to get rid of as many non-important variables in your models as possible, because otherwise, you know, the chaos and the messy math kind of spins out of control and actually makes your model worse because you've incorporated more data. So, it's a really an interesting sort of situation that we find ourselves in. But let me, we're just about at time, and I guess there was another question I wanted to ask, and that was, if we wax iconoclastic for a little bit here, if the industry hasn't gotten out of its OpEx programs what was imagined, then I guess the question is, what do we do next? You know, what's the next evolutionary step for process improvement, or what is the next iteration of OE need to include to do a better job at making jobs better?
I think, well, what we are going to want as an industry is we are going to want to produce our own version of OE, like one that's born out of and really optimized for, right, biotech and pharma operations. And what that would look like to me is still want all the data-driven tools, right? Still want to make sure we want to be building on that. We want to be building on what's there, because what's there is not bad, right? We want to take what's there, and we want to find a way, I think, to speed up the way we can cycle through the improvements, and ways we can, you know, get empirical data, right? That's what we need to do experiments. We need to get data. We need to read and react to that. And I think we already are starting to see some of that happen, right? I think the ability for us to do a lot of experiments very quickly with some of these, you know, the Amber systems and things like that, some of these sort of in silico tools now that we've got, these AI machine learning bioreactor simulators that are starting to get pretty good, right? Not perfectly correct, but to your point, right? Not all models are wrong. Some models are useful. And I think there's going to be a way for us to bring a lot of things together that, you know, can allow us to, from the early development phases, right? From the early development phases, be able to make much more informed judgments about how things are likely to behave, right, as it moves through into future development stages. And I think that is going to be the thing that I think, you know, takes us to the next level. It won't be something that happens on the manufacturing floor, right? I think this is going to happen much earlier, right? At a stage in program development where we have the flexibility to iterate, you know, without needing like GMP change controls, right? We want to be doing this in the early development bench where we can iterate rapidly and, you know, generate a lot of what would hopefully be very useful data, put together very good models, and sort of come out the other end with something that can be optimized, not just for like the quality elements, right? Obviously, we've been talking a lot about quality, but also something that can be very user-friendly, right? I think we put a lot of energy into quality by design. I think design for manufacturing is a little bit underserved. And I think that's something that can also be better incorporated into those early development phases. I think that's where the real benefit's going to be. Because I think there's a way in our industry in which once you have your GMP process encoded in batch records and SOPs, the ability to like make the meaningful changes that will get you really big benefits, you are at that point constrained, right? Especially if a process has gone into an IND filing and is now subject to, like, you know, regulatory governance to make changes, it's going to be very difficult to get everything we want out of OE once we've put that GMP box around us.
Great points. All right. Well, you heard it here first. that's about all the time we have for today. Any parting thoughts for our listeners?
I guess, you know, again, I just want to reiterate, nothing wrong with OE. The status quo is pretty good. It's pretty good, right? You and I, we've done the trainings, you know, we have our Six Sigma belts and all that. You know, I think we've gotten a lot out of OE, but, you know, it's stagnant, and we should be pushing it because I think we could still be better.
Love it. Thank you so much, Brian. It was fantastic to chat with you and always insightful. Appreciate your time.
Great to see you. Cheers.
All right.
We hope you enjoy today's podcast. Please visit www.evaluatingbiopharma.com to access the on-demand video and to download the summary article. You can also access the Evaluating Biopharma content archive, sign up for our newsletter, and register to attend an upcoming Evaluating Biopharma virtual networking event. Feedback or suggestions? We'd love to hear from you.